He leaned against the door once he shut it. The top of his black tunic unbuttoned to reveal the upper whorls of the tattoo spanning his chest. "The problem, I've realized, will be that I like Tarquin," he said by way of greeting. "I even like Cressida. Varian I could live without, but I'd bet a few weeks with Cassian and Azrael, and he'd be thick as thieves with them, and I'd have to learn to like him. Or he'd be wrapped around Amryn's finger, and I'd have to leave him alone entirely or risk her wrath." "And?" I took up a spot against the dresser, where clothes that I had not packed but were clearly of Night Court origin had been already waiting for me. The space of the room, the large bed, the windows, the sunlight, filled the silence between us. "And," Rhys said, "I want you to find a way to do what you have to without making enemies of them."
"So you're telling me don't get caught?"
A nod.
"Then,
do you like that Tarquin can't stop looking at you? I can't tell if it's because he wants you or because he knows you have his power and wants to see how much."
"Can't it be both?"
"Of course. But having a High Lord lusting after you is a dangerous game."
"First you taunt me with Cassian, now Tarquin? Can't you find other ways to annoy me?"
Rhys prowled closer, and I steadied myself for his scent, his warmth, the impact of his power. He braced a hand on either side of me, gripping the dresser. I refused to shrink away.
"You have one task here, Feyre. One task that no one can know about. So do anything you have to in order to accomplish it. But get that book, and do not get caught."
I wasn't some simpering fool. I knew the risks. And that tone, that look he always gave me.
"Anything?"
His brows rose. I breathed. "If I fucked him for it, what would you do?" His pupils flared, and his gaze dropped to my mouth. The wood dresser groaned beneath his hands.
"You say such atrocious things."
I waited, my heart an uneven beat. He at last met my eyes again.
"You are always free to do what you want with whomever you want. So if you want to ride him, go ahead."
"Maybe I will." Though a part of me wanted to retort, "Liar."
"Fine."
His breath caressed my mouth. "Fine," I said, aware of every inch between us, the distance smaller and smaller, the challenge heightening with each second neither of us moved.
"Do not," he said softly,
his eyes like stars,
"jeopardize this mission."
"I know the cost." The sheer power of him enveloped me, shaking me awake. The salt and the sea and the breeze tugged on me, sang to me. And as if Rhys heard them too, he inclined his head toward the unlit candle on the dresser.
"Light it."
I debated arguing, but looked at the candle, summoning fire, summoning that hot anger he managed to rile. The candle was knocked off the dresser by a violent splash of water, as if someone had chucked a bucketful. I gaped at the water drenching the dresser, its dripping on the marble floor the only sound. Rhys, hands still braced on either side of me, laughed quietly.
"Can't you ever follow orders?"
But whatever it was, being here, close to Tarquin and his power, I could feel that water answering me. Feel it coating the floor. Feel the sea churning and idling in the bay. Taste the salt on the breeze. I held Rhys's gaze. No one was my master, but I might be master of everything if I wished. If I dared. Like a strange rain, The water rose from the floor as I willed it to become like those stars Rhys had summoned in his blanket of darkness. I willed the droplets to separate until they hung around us, catching the light and sparkling like crystals on a chandelier. Rhys broke my stare to study them.
"I suggest," he murmured, "you not show Tarquin that little trick in the bedroom."
I sent each and one of those droplets shooting for the High Lord's face. Too fast, too swiftly for him to shield. Some of them sprayed me as they ricocheted off him. Both of us now soaking, Rhys gaped a bit, then smiled. "Good work," he said, at last pushing off the dresser. He didn't bother to wipe away the water gleaming on his skin. "Keep practicing." But I said, "Will he go to war? Over me?" He knew who I meant. The hot temper that had been on Rhys's face moments before turned to lethal calm.
"I don't know."
I would go back. If it came to that, Rhysand, I'd go back rather than make you fight. He slid a still wet hand into his pocket.
"Would you want to go back? Would going to war on your behalf make you love him again? Would that be a grand gesture to win you?"
I swallowed hard. "I'm tired of death. I wouldn't want to see anyone else die, least of all for me."
"That doesn't answer my question."
"No. I wouldn't want to go back, but I would. Pain and killing wouldn't win me." Rhys stared at me for a moment longer, his face unreadable, before he strode to the door. He stopped with his fingers on the sea urchin-shaped handle.
"He locked you up because he knew. The bastard knew what a treasure you are. That you are worth more than land or gold or jewels, he knew, and wanted to keep you all to himself."
The words hit me, even as they soothed some jagged peace in my soul. "He does love me, Rhysand."
"The issue isn't whether he loved you, it's how much. Too much. Love can be a poison."
And then he was gone. The bay was calm enough, perhaps willed to flatness by its lord and master, that the pleasure barge hardly rocked throughout the hours we dined and drank aboard it. Crafted of richest wood and gold, the enormous boat was amply sized for the 100 or so high fae trying their best not to observe every movement Rhys, Amryn, and I made. The main deck was full of low tables and couches for eating and relaxing, and on the upper level, beneath a canopy of tiles set with mother-of-pearl, our long table had been set. Tarquin was summer incarnate in turquoise and gold, bits of emerald shining at his buttons and fingers. A crown of sapphire and white gold fashioned like cresting waves sat atop his seafoam-colored hair, so exquisite that I often caught myself staring at it. As I was now, when he turned to where I sat on his right and noticed my stare.
"You'd think with our skilled jewelers they could make a crown a bit more comfortable. This one digs in horribly."
A pleasant enough attempt at conversation, when I'd stayed quiet throughout the first hour, instead watching the island city, the water, the mainland, casting a net of awareness, a blind power toward it, to see if anything answered. If the book slumbered somewhere out there. Nothing had answered my silent call. So I figured it was as good a time as any, as I said, "How did you keep it out of her hands?" Saying Amarantha's name here, amongst such happy, celebrating people, felt like inviting in a rain cloud. Seated at his left, deep in conversation with Cressida, Rhys didn't so much as look over at me. Indeed, he'd barely spoken to me earlier, not even noting my clothes. Unusual. given that even I had been pleased with how I looked and had again selected it for myself. My hair unbound and swept off my face with a headband of braided rose gold, my sleeveless, dust-pink chiffon gown, tight in the chest and waist, the near twin to the purple one I'd worn that morning. Feminine, soft, pretty. I hadn't felt like those things in a long, long while. Hadn't wanted to. But here, being those things wouldn't earn me a ticket to a life of party planning. Here, I could be soft and lovely at sunset and awaken in the morning to slide into Illyrian fighting leathers. Tarquin said,
"We managed to smuggle out most of our treasure when the territory fell. Nostris, my predecessor, was my cousin. I served as prince of another city. So I got the order to hide the trove in the dead of night fast as we could."
Amarantha had killed Nostris when he'd rebelled, and executed his entire family for spite. Tarquin must have been one of the few surviving members if the power had passed to him. "I didn't know the Summer Court valued treasure so much," I said.
Tarquin huffed a laugh.
"The earliest High Lords did. We do now, out of tradition, mostly."
I said carefully, casually, "So is it gold and jewels you value, then?"
"Among other things."
I sipped my wine to buy time to think of a way to ask without raising suspicions. But maybe being direct about it would be better.
"Are outsiders allowed to see the collection? My father was a merchant. I spent most of my childhood in his office, helping him with his goods. It would be interesting to compare mortal riches to those made by fey hands."
Rhys kept talking to Cressida, not even a hint of approval or amusement going through our bond.
Tarquin cocked his head, the jewels in his crown glinting.
"Of course. Tomorrow, after lunch, perhaps?"
He wasn't stupid, and he might have been aware of the game, but the offer was genuine. I smiled a bit, nodding. I looked toward the crowd milling about on the deck below, the lantern-lit water beyond, even as I felt Tarquin's gaze linger. He said,
"What was it like, the mortal world?"
I picked at the strawberry salad on my plate. "I only saw a very small slice of it. My father was called the Prince of Merchants, but I was too young to be taken on his voyages to other parts of the mortal world. When I was 11, he lost our fortune on a shipment to Barat. We spent the next 8 years in poverty, in a backwater village near the wall. So I can't speak for the entirety of the mortal world when I say that what I saw there was hard. Brutal. Here, class lines are far more blurred, it seems. There, it's defined by money. Either you have it and you don't share it, or you're left to starve and fight for your survival. My father, he regained his wealth once I went to Prithian." My heart tightened, then dropped into my stomach. And the very people who had been content to let us starve were once again our friends. I would rather face every creature in Prithian than the monsters on the other side of the wall. Without magic, without power, money has become the only thing that matters.
Tarquin's lips were pursed, but his eyes were considering.
"Would you spare them if war came?"
Such a dangerous, loaded question. I wouldn't tell him what we were doing over the wall, not unless Rhys had indicated we should.
"My sisters dwell with my father on his estate. For them, I would fight. But for those sycophants and peacocks, I would not mind to see their order disrupted.
Like the hate-mongering family of Elaine's betrothed."
Tarquin said very quietly,
"There are some in Prithian who would think the same of the courts."
"What? Get rid of the High Lords?"
"Perhaps. But mostly eliminate the inherent privileges of High Fae over the lesser fairies. Even the terms imply a level of unfairness. Maybe it is more like the human realm than you realize, not as blurred as it might seem. In some courts, the lowest of high fae servants has more rights than the wealthiest of lesser fairies.
I became aware that we were not the only people on the barge at this table, and that we were surrounded by high fae with animal keen hearing. Do you agree with them? That it should change?
I am a young High Lord, he said. Barely 80 years old.
So he'd been 30 when Amarantha took over.
Perhaps others might call me inexperienced or foolish, but I have seen those cruelties firsthand and known many good lesser fairies who suffered for merely being born on the wrong side of power. Even within my own residences, the confines of tradition pressure me to enforce the rules of my predecessors. The lesser fairies are neither to be seen nor heard as they work. I would like to one day see a Prithian in which they have a voice, both in my home and in the world beyond it.
I scanned him for any deceit, manipulation. I found none. Steal from him. I would steal from him. But what if I asked instead? Would he give it to me? Or would the traditions of his ancestors run too deep?
Tell me what that look means, Tarquin said, bracing his muscled arms on the gold tablecloth.
I said baldly, I'm thinking it would be very easy to love you, and easier to call you my friend. He smiled at me, broad and without restraint.
I would not object to either.
Easy. Very easy to fall in love with a kind, considerate male. But I glanced over at Cressida, who was now almost in Rhysand's lap. And Rhysand was smiling like a cat, one finger tracing circles on the back of her hand while she bit her lip and beamed. I faced Tarquin, my brows high in silent question. He made a face and shook his head. I hoped they went to her room. Because if I had to listen to Rhys bed her... I didn't let myself finish the thought. Tarquin mused.
It has been many years since I saw her look like that.
My cheeks heated. Shame. Shame for what? Wanting to throttle her for no good reason? Rhysand teased and taunted me. He never... seduced me. With those long, intense stares, the half-smiles that were pure Illyrian arrogance. I supposed I'd been granted that gift once, and had used it up and fought for it and broken it. And I supposed that Rhysand, for all he had sacrificed and done, he deserved it as much as Cressida. Even if for a moment I wanted it. I wanted to feel like that again. And I was lonely. I had been lonely, I realized, for a very, very long time. Rhys leaned in to hear something Cressida was saying, her lips brushing his ear, her hand now entwining with his. And it wasn't sorrow or despair or terror that hit me, but unhappiness. Such bleak, sharp unhappiness that I got to my feet. Rhys's eyes shifted toward me, at last remembering I existed and there was nothing on his face. No hint that he felt any of what I did through our bond. I didn't care that I had no shield. If my thoughts were wide open and he read them like a book, he didn't seem to care either. He went back to chuckling at whatever Cressida was telling him, sliding closer. Tarquin had risen to his feet, scanning me and Rhys. I was unhappy. Not just broken, but unhappy. An emotion, I realized. It was an emotion, rather than the unending emptiness or survival-driven terror. I need some fresh air, I said, even though we were in the open. But with the golden lights, the people up and down the table, I needed to find a spot on this barge where I could be alone, just for a moment, mission or no.
Would you like me to join you?
I looked at the High Lord of Summer. I hadn't lied. It would be easy to fall in love with a man like him. But I wasn't entirely sure that even with the hardships he'd encountered under the mountain, Tarquin could understand the darkness that might always be in me. Not only from Amarantha, but from years spent being hungry and desperate. That I might always be a little bit vicious or restless. That I might crave peace, but never a cage of comfort. I'm fine. Thank you, I said, and headed for the sweeping staircase that led down onto the stern of the ship, brightly lit, but quieter than the main areas at the prow. Rhys didn't so much as look in my direction as I walked away. Good riddance. I was halfway down the wood steps when I spotted Amryn and Varian, both leaning against adjacent pillars, both drinking wine, both ignoring each other, even as they spoke to no one else. Perhaps that was another reason why she'd come, to distract Tarquin's watchdog. I reached the main deck, found a spot by the wooden railing that was a bit more shadowed than the rest, and leaned against it. Magic propelled the boat, no oars, no sails. So we moved through the bay, silent and smooth, hardly a ripple in our wake. I didn't realize I'd been waiting for him until the barge docked at the base of the island city, and I'd somehow spent the entire final hour alone. When I filed on to land with the rest of the crowd, Amryn, Varian, and Tarquin were waiting for me at the docks, all a bit stiff-backed. Rhysand and Cressida were nowhere to be seen.
Chapter 34. Mercifully, there was no sound from his closed bedroom, and no sounds came out of it during that night when I jolted awake from a nightmare of being turned over a spit and couldn't remember where I was. Moonlight danced on the sea beyond my open windows, and there was silence. Such silence. A weapon. I was a weapon to find that book, to stop the king from breaking the wall, to stop whatever he had planned for Jurien and the war that might destroy my world, that might destroy this place, and a high lord who might very well overturn the order of things. For a heartbeat, I missed Valaris, missed the lights and the music and the rainbow. I missed the cozy warmth of the townhouse to welcome me in from the crisp winter, missed what it had been like to be a part of their little unit. Maybe wrapping his wings around me, writing me notes, had been Rhys's way of ensuring his weapon didn't break beyond repair. That was fine. Fair enough. We owed each other nothing beyond our promises to work and fight together. He could still be my friend, companion, whatever this thing was between us. His taking someone to his bed didn't change those things. It had just been a relief to think that, for a moment, he might have been as lonely as me. I didn't have the nerve to come out of my room for breakfast to see if Rhys had returned, to see whom he came to breakfast with. I had nothing else to do, I told myself as I lay in bed, until my lunchtime visit with Tarquin. So I stayed there until the servants came in, apologized for disturbing me, and started to leave. I stopped them, saying I'd bathe while they cleaned the room. They were polite, if nervous, and merely nodded as I did as I'd claimed. I took my time in the bath, and behind the locked door, I let that kernel of Tarquin's power come out, first making the water rise from the tub, then shaping little animals and creatures out of it. It was about as close to transformation as I had let myself go. Contemplating how I might give myself animalistic features only made me shaky. Sick. I could ignore it. Ignore that occasional scrape of claws in my blood for a while yet. I was on to water butterflies flitting through the room when I realized I'd been in the tub long enough that the bath had gone cold. Like the night before, Nuala walked through the walls from wherever she was staying in the palace and dressed me, somehow attuned to when I'd be ready. Caradwyn, she told me, had drawn the short stick and was seeing to Amren. I didn't have the nerve to ask about Rhys, either. Nuala selected seafoam green accented with rose gold, curling and then braiding back my hair in a thick, loose plait glimmering with bits of pearl. Whether Nuala knew why I was there, what I'd be doing, she didn't say. But she took extra care of my face, brightening my lips with raspberry pink, dusting my cheeks with the faintest blush. I might have looked innocent, charming, were it not for my gray-blue eyes, more hollow than they'd been last night when I'd admired myself in the mirror. I'd seen enough of the palace to navigate to where Tarquin had said to meet before we bid goodnight. The main hall was situated on a level about halfway up, the perfect meeting place for those who dwelled in the spires above and those who worked unseen and unheard below. This level held all the various council rooms, ballrooms, dining rooms, and whatever other rooms might be needed for visitors, events, gatherings. Access to the residential levels from which I'd come was guarded by 4 soldiers at each stairwell, all of whom watched me carefully as I waited against a seashell pillar for their high lord. I wondered if he could sense that I'd been playing with his power in the bathtub, that the piece of him he'd yielded was now here and answering to me. Tarquin emerged from one of the adjacent rooms as the clock struck 2, followed by my own companions. Rhysand's gaze swept over me, noting the clothes that were obviously in honor of my host and his people. Noting the way I did not meet his eyes or Cressida's as I looked solely at Tarquin and Amren beside him. Varian now striding off to the soldiers at the stairs and gave them both a bland, close-lipped smile.
"You're looking well today," Tarquin said, inclining his head.
Nuala, it seemed, was a spectacularly good spy. Tarquin's pewter tunic was accented with the same shade of seafoam green as my clothes. We might as well have been a matching set. I supposed with my brown gold hair and pale skin, I was his mirror opposite.
I could feel Rhys still assessing me. I shut him out. Maybe I'd send a water dog barking after him later. Let it bite him in the ass.
I hope I'm not interrupting, I said to Amren. Amren shrugged her slim shoulders, clad in flagstone gray today.
We were finishing up a rather lively debate about armadas and who might be in charge of a unified front. Did you know, she said, that before they became so big and powerful, Tarquin and Varian led Nostris's fleet?
Varian, several feet away, stiffened, but did not turn. I met Tarquin's eyes. You didn't mention you were a sailor. It was an effort to sound intrigued, like I had nothing at all bothering me. Tarquin rubbed his neck.
I had planned to tell you during our tour. He held out an arm. Shall we? Not one word. I had not uttered one word to Rhysand, and I wasn't about to start as I looped my arm through Tarquin's and said to none of them in particular,
"See you later." Something brushed against my mental shield, a rumble of something dark, powerful. Perhaps a warning to be careful. Though it felt an awful lot like the dark, flickering emotion that had haunted me, so much like it that I stepped a bit closer to Tarquin. And then I gave the High Lord of Summer a pretty, mindless smile that I had not given to anyone in a long, long time. That brush of emotion went silent on the other side of my shields.
Good,
Tarquin brought me to a hall of jewels and treasure so vast that I gawked for a good minute. A minute that I used to scan the shelves for any twinkle of feeling, anything that felt like the male at my side, like the power I'd summoned in the bathtub.
And this is just one of the troves?
The room had been carved deep beneath the castle, behind a heavy lead door that had only opened when Tarquin placed his hand on it. I didn't dare get close enough to the lock to see if it might work under my touch, his feigned signature.
A fox in the chicken coop, that's what I was.
Tarquin loosed a chuckle.
My ancestors were greedy bastards.
I shook my head, striding to the shelves built into the wall. Solid stone. No way to break in, unless I tunneled through the mountain itself. Or if someone winnowed me. Though there were likely wards similar to those on the townhouse and the House of Wind. Boxes overflowed with jewels and pearls and uncut gems. Gold heaped in trunks so high it spilled onto the cobblestone floor. Suits of ornate armor stood guard against one wall. Dresses woven of cobwebs and starlight leaned against another. There were swords and daggers of every sort, but no books. Not one.
Do you know the history behind each piece?
Some, he said. I haven't had much time to learn about it all.
Good. Maybe he wouldn't know about the book, wouldn't miss it.
I turned in a circle.
What's the most valuable thing in here?
Thinking of stealing?
I choked on a laugh.
Wouldn't asking that question make me a lousy thief?
Lying, two-faced wretch. That's what asking that question made me.
Tarquin studied me.
I'd say I'm looking at the most valuable thing in here.
I didn't fake the blush.
You're very kind.
His smile was soft. As if his position had not yet broken the compassion in him, I hoped it never did.
Honestly, I don't know what's the most valuable thing. These are all priceless heirlooms of my house.
I walked up to a shelf, scanning. A necklace of rubies was splayed on a velvet pillow, each of them the size of a robin's egg.
It'd take a tremendous female to wear that necklace, to dominate the gems and not the other way around.
On another shelf, a necklace of pearls, then sapphires. And on another, a necklace of black diamonds. Each of the dark stones was a mystery and an answer. Each of them slumbered. Tarquin came up behind me, peering over my shoulder at what had snagged my interest. His gaze drifted to my face.
Take it.
What?
I whirled to him. He rubbed the back of his neck.
As a thank you for Under the Mountain.
Ask it now. Ask him for the book instead.
But that would require trust. And, kind as he was a High Lord.
He pulled the box from its resting spot and shut the lid before handing it to me.
You were the first person who didn't laugh at my idea to break down class barriers. Even Cressida snickered when I told her. If you won't accept the necklace for saving us, then take it for that.
It is a good idea, Tarquin. Appreciating it doesn't mean you have to reward me. He shook his head.
Just take it.
It would insult him if I refused, so I closed my hands around the box. Tarquin said,
It will suit you in the Night Court.
Perhaps I'll stay here and help you revolutionize the world. His mouth twisted to the side.
I could use an ally in the north.
Was that why he had brought me? Why he'd given me the gift? I hadn't realized how alone we were down here, that I was beneath the ground, in a place that could be easily sealed, You have nothing to fear from me, he said, and I wondered if my scent was that readable. But I meant it. You have sway with Rhysand, and he is notoriously difficult to deal with. He gets what he wants, has plans he does not tell anyone about until after he's completed them, and does not apologize for any of it. Be his emissary to the human realm, but also be ours. You've seen my city. I have 3 others like it. Amarantha wrecked them almost immediately after she took over. All my people want now is peace and safety, and to never have to look over their shoulders again. Other High Lords have told me about Rhys, and warned me about him. But he spared me under the mountain. Bruteus was my cousin, and we had forces gathering in all of our cities to storm under the mountain. They caught him sneaking out through the tunnels to meet with them. Rhys saw that in Bruteus's mind. I know he did. And yet he lied to her face and defied her when she gave the order to turn him into a living ghost. Maybe it was for his own schemes, but I know it was a mercy. He knows that I am young and inexperienced, and he spared me.
Tarquin shook his head, mostly at himself.
Sometimes I think Rhysand... I think he might have been her whore to spare us all from her full attention.
I would betray nothing of what I knew, but I suspected he could see it in my eyes, the sorrow at the thought.
I know I'm supposed to look at you, Tarquin said, and see that he's made you into a pet, into a monster. But I see the kindness in you, and I think that reflects more on him than anything. I think it shows that you and he might have many secrets.
Stop, I blurted. Just stop. You know I can't tell you anything, and I can't promise you anything. Rhysand is High Lord. I only serve in his court.
Tarquin glanced at the ground. Forgive me if I've been forward. I'm still learning how to play the games of these courts, to my advisor's chagrin.
I hope you never learn how to play the games of these courts. Tarquin held my gaze, face wary, but a bit bleak. Then allow me to ask you a blunt question. Is it true you left Tamlin because he locked you up in his house? I tried to block out the memory, the terror and agony of my heart breaking apart. But I nodded.
And is it true that you were saved from confinement by the Night Court?
I nodded again.
Tarquin said, The Spring Court is my southern neighbor. I have tenuous ties with them, but unless asked, I will not mention that you were here.
Thief, liar, manipulator, I didn't deserve his alliance. But I bowed my head in thanks. Any other treasure troves to show me?
Are gold and jewels not impressive enough? What of your merchant's eye?
I tapped the box.
Oh, I got what I wanted.
Now I'm curious to see how much your alliance is worth. Tarquin laughed, the sound bouncing off the stone and wealth around us.
I didn't feel like going to my meetings this afternoon anyway. What a reckless, wild young High Lord!
Tarquin linked elbows with me again, patting my arm as he led me from the chamber.
You know, I think it might be very easy to love you too, Feyre. Easier to be your friend.
I made myself look away shyly as he sealed the door shut behind us, placing a palm flat on the space above the handle. I listened to the click of locks sliding into place. Tarquin took me to other rooms beneath his palace, some full of jewels, others weapons, others clothes from eras long since past. He showed me one full of books, and my heart leaped, but there was nothing in there, nothing but leather and dust and quiet, no trickle of power that felt like the mail beside me, no hint of the book I needed. He brought me to one last room, full of crates and stacks covered in sheets.
And as I beheld all the artwork looming beyond the open door, I said, I think I've seen enough for today. He asked no questions as he resealed the chamber and escorted me back to the busy, sunny upper levels. There had to be other places where it might be stored, unless it was in another city. I had to find it. Soon. There was only so long Rhys and Amryn could draw out their political debates before we had to go home. I just prayed I'd find it fast enough, and not hate myself any more than I currently did. Rhysand was lounging on my bed as if he owned it. I took one look at the hands crossed behind his head, the long legs draped over the edge of the mattress, and ground my teeth. What do you want? I shut the door loud enough to emphasize the bite in my words. Flirting and giggling with Tarquin did you no good, I take it? I chucked the box onto the bed beside him. You tell me.
The smile faltered as he sat up, flipping open the lid.
This isn't the book.
No, but it's a beautiful gift.
You want me to buy you jewelry, Feyre, then say the word. I thought you were aware that it was all bought for you. I hadn't realized, but I said,
Tarquin is a good male. A good High Lord. You should just ask him for the damn book.
Rhys snapped the lid shut.
So he plies you with jewels and pours honey in your ear, and now you feel bad?
He wants your alliance. Desperately. He wants to trust you, rely on you.
Well, Cressida is under the impression that her cousin is rather ambitious, so I'd be careful to read between his words.
Oh? Did she tell you that before, during, or after you took her to bed? Rhys stood in a graceful, slow movement.
Is that why you wouldn't look at me? Because you think I fucked her for information?
Information or your own pleasure, I don't care. He came around the bed, and I stood my ground, even as he stopped with hardly a hand's breadth between us.
Jealous, Feyre?
If I'm jealous, then you're jealous about Tarquin and his honey pouring.
Rhysand's teeth flashed. Do you think I particularly like having to flirt with a lonely female to get information about her court, her High Lord? Do you think I feel good about myself doing that? Do you think I enjoy doing it just so you have the space to ply Tarquin with your smiles and pretty eyes so we can get the book and go home?
You seemed to be enjoying yourself plenty last night.
His snarl was soft, vicious. I didn't take her to bed. She wanted to, but I didn't so much as kiss her. I took her out for a drink in the city, let her talk about her life, her pressures, and brought her back to her room, and went no farther than the door. I waited for you at breakfast, but you slept in, or avoided me, apparently. And I tried to catch your eye this afternoon, but you were so good at shutting me out completely.
Is that what got under your skin? That I shut you out, or that it was so easy for Tarquin to get in?
What got under my skin, he said.
His breathing a bit uneven.
Is that you smiled at him?
The rest of the world faded into mist as the words sank in. You are jealous. He shook his head, stalking to the little table against the far wall and knocking back a glass of amber liquid. He braced his hands on the table, the powerful muscles of his back quivering beneath his shirt as the shadow of those wings struggled to take form.
I heard what you told him, he said, that you thought it would be easy to fall in love with him. You meant it, too.
So? It was the only thing I could think of to say.
I was jealous. Of that. That I'm not that sort of person for anyone. The summer court has always been neutral. They only showed backbone during those years under the mountain. I spared Tarquin's life because I'd heard how he wanted to even out the playing field between High Fey and Lesser Fairies. I'd been trying to do that for years. Unsuccessfully, but I spared him for that alone. And Tarquin, with his neutral court, he will never have to worry about someone walking away because the threat against their life, their children's lives, will always be there. So yes, I was jealous of him.
Because it will always be easy for him. And he will never know what it is like to look up at the night sky and wish.
The Court of Dreams. The people who knew that there was a price, and one worth paying, for that dream. The bastard-born warriors, the Illyrian half-breed, the monster trapped in a beautiful body, the dreamer born into a court of nightmares, and the huntress with an artist's soul. And perhaps because it was the most vulnerable thing he'd said to me, perhaps it was the burning in my eyes, but I walked to where he stood over the little bar. I didn't look at him as I took the decanter of amber liquid and poured myself a knuckle's length, then refilled his. But I met his stare as I clinked my glass against his, the crystal ringing clear and bright over the crashing sea far below, and said, "To the people who look at the stars and wish, Rhys." He picked up his glass, his gaze so piercing that I wondered why I had bothered blushing at all for Tarquin. Rhys clinked his glass against mine.
"To the stars who listen, and the dreams that are answered."
Chapter 35. 2 days passed. Every moment of it was a balancing act of truth and lies. Rhys saw to it that I was not invited to the meetings he and Amryn held to distract my kind host, granting me time to scour the city for any hint of the book. But not too eagerly, not too intently. I could not look too intrigued as I wandered the streets and docks, could not ask too many leading questions of the people I encountered about the treasures and legends of Adriata. Even when I awoke at dawn, I made myself wait until a reasonable hour before setting out into the city, made myself take an extended bath to secretly practice that water magic. And while crafting water animals grew tedious after an hour, it came to me easily, perhaps because of my proximity to Tarquin, perhaps because of whatever affinity for water was already in my blood, my soul, though I certainly was in no position to ask. Once breakfast had finally been served and consumed, I made sure to look a bit bored and aimless when I finally strode through the shining halls of the palace on my way out into the awakening city. Hardly anyone recognized me as I casually examined shops and houses and bridges for any glimmer of a spell that felt like Tarquin, though I doubted they had reason to. It had been the High Fae, the nobility, that had been kept under the mountain. These people had been left here to be tormented. Scars littered the buildings, the streets, from what had been done in retaliation for their rebellion. Burn marks, gouged bits of stone, entire buildings turned to rubble. The back of the castle, as Tarquin had claimed, was indeed in the middle of being repaired. 3 turrets were half shattered, the tan stone charred and crumbling. No sign of the book. Workers toiled there, and throughout the city, to fix those broken areas. Just as the people I saw, high fae and fairies with scales and gills and long, spindly webbed fingers, all seemed to be slowly healing. There were scars and missing limbs on more than I could count, but in their eyes, light gleamed. I had saved them, too. Freed them from whatever horrors had occurred during those 5 decades. I had done a terrible thing to save them. But I had saved them. And it would never be enough to atone, but I did not feel quite so heavy, despite not finding the glimmer of the book's presence, when I returned to the palace atop the hill on the 3rd night to await Rhysand's report on the day's meetings, and learn if he'd managed to discover anything, too.
as I strode up the steps of the palace, cursing myself for remaining so out of shape even with Cassian's lessons, I spied Amryn perched on the ledge of a turret balcony, cleaning her nails. Varian leaned against the threshold of another tower balcony within jumping range, and I wondered if he was debating if he could clear the distance fast enough to push her off. A cat playing with a dog. That's what it was. Amryn was practically washing herself, silently daring him to get close enough to sniff. I doubted Varian would like her claws. Unless that was why he hounded her day and night. I shook my head, continuing up the steps, watching as the tide swept out. The sunset-stained sky caught on the water and tidal muck. A little night breeze whispered past, and I leaned into it, letting it cool the sweat on me. There had once been a time when I had dreaded the end of summer, had prayed it would hold out for as long as possible. Now the thought of endless warmth and sun made me bored, restless. I was about to turn back to the stairs when I beheld a bit of land that had been revealed near the tidal causeway, the small building. No wonder I hadn't seen it, as I'd never been up this high in the day when the tide was out. And during the rest of the day, from the muck and seaweed now gleaming on it, it would have been utterly covered. Even now it was half submerged. But I couldn't tear my eyes from it. Like it was a little piece of home, wet and miserable looking as it was, and I need only hurry along the muddy causeway between the quieter part of the city and the mainland, fast, 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 so I might catch it before it vanished beneath the waves again. But the sight was too visible, and from the distance I couldn't definitively tell if it was the book contained within. We'd have to be absolutely certain before we went in, to warrant the risks in searching, absolutely certain. I wished I didn't, but I realized I already had a plan for that, too. We dined with Tarquin, Cresseida, and Varian in their family dining room, a sure sign that the High Lord did indeed want that alliance, ambition or no. Varian was studying Amryn as if he was trying to solve a riddle she'd posed to him, and she paid him no heed whatsoever as she debated with Cresseida about various translations of some ancient text. I'd been leading up to my question, telling Tarquin of the things I'd seen in his city that day, the fresh fish I'd bought for myself on the docks.
"You ate it right there," Tarquin said, lifting his brows.
Rhys had propped his head on a fist as I said. They fried it with the other fishermen's lunches. Didn't charge me extra for it. Tarquin let out an impressed laugh.
"I can't say I've ever done that, sailor or no."
"You should," I said, meaning every word. It was delicious. I'd worn the necklace he'd given me, and Nuala and I planned my clothes around it. We'd decided on gray, a soft dove shade to show off the glittering black. I had worn nothing else, no earrings, no bracelets, no rings. Tarquin had seemed pleased by it, even though Varian had choked when he beheld me in an heirloom of his household. Cresseida, surprisingly, had told me it suited me, and it didn't fit in here anyway. A backhanded compliment, but praise enough.
"Well, maybe I'll go tomorrow, if you'll join me."
I grinned at Tarquin, aware of everyone I offered him now that Rhys had mentioned it. Beyond his giving me brief nightly updates on their lack of progress with discovering anything about the book, we hadn't really spoken since that evening I'd filled his glass, though it had been because of our own full days, not awkwardness. "I'd like that," I said. "Perhaps we could go for a walk in the morning down the causeway when the tide is out. There's that little building along the way. It looks fascinating." Cresseida stopped speaking, but I went on, sipping from my wine. I figured since I've seen most of the city now, I could see it on my way to visit some of the mainland, too.
Tarquin's glance at Cressida was all the confirmation I needed. That stone building indeed guarded what we sought.
It's just a temple ruin, Tarquin said blandly, the lie smooth as silk. Just mud and seaweed at this point. We've been meaning to repair it for years.
Maybe we'll take the bridge then. I've had enough mud for a while.
Remember that I saved you, that I fought the Midengard worm. Forget the threat. Tarquin's eyes held mine, for a moment too long. In a span of a blink, I hurled my silent hidden power toward him, a spear aimed toward his mind, those wary eyes. There was a shield in place, a shield of sea glass and coral and the undulating sea. I became that sea, became the whisper of waves against stone, the glimmer of sunlight on a gull's white wings. I became him, became that mental shield. And then I was through it, a clear dark tether showing me the way back should I need it. I let instinct, no doubt granted from Rhys, guide me forward to what I needed to see. Tarquin's thoughts hit me like pebbles. Why does she ask about the temple? Of all the things to bring up. Around me they continued eating. I continued eating. I willed my own face in a different body, a different world, to smile pleasantly.
Why did they want to come here so badly? Why ask about my trove?
Like lapping waves, I sent my thoughts washing over his. She is harmless. She is kind and sad and broken. You saw her with your people. You saw how she treated them, how she treats you. Amarantha did not break that kindness. I poured my thoughts into him, tinting them with brine and the cries of terns, wrapping them in the essence that was Tarquin, the essence he'd given to me. Take her to the mainland tomorrow. That'll keep her from asking about the temple. She saved Prithian. She is your friend. My thoughts settled in him like a stone dropped into a pool, and as the wariness faded in his eyes, I knew my work was done. I hauled myself back, 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 slipping through that ocean and pearl wall, reeling inward until my body was a cage around me. Tarquin smiled.
We'll meet after breakfast, unless Rhysand wants me for more meetings.
Neither Cressida nor Varian so much as glanced at him. Had Rhys taken care of their own suspicions? Lightning shot through my blood, even as my blood chilled to realize what I'd done. Rhys waved a lazy hand.
By all means, Tarquin, spend the day with my lady. My lady. I ignored the two words.
But I shut out my own marveling at what I'd accomplished. The slow-building horror at the invisible violation Tarquin would never know about. I leaned forward, bracing my bare forearms on the cool wood table. "Tell me what there is to see on the mainland," I asked Tarquin, and steered him away from the temple on the tidal causeway. Rhys and Amran waited until the household lights dimmed before coming into my room. I'd been sitting in bed, counting down the minutes, forming my plan. None of the guest rooms looked out on the causeway, as if they wanted no one to notice it. Rhys arrived first, leaning against the closed door.
What a fast learner you are! It takes most Daemadi years to master that sort of infiltration.
My nails bit into my palms.
You knew that I did it?
Speaking the words aloud felt too much, too real. A shallow nod.
And what expert work you did, using the essence of him to trick his shields to get past them. Clever lady.
He'll never forgive me, I breathed.
He'll never know.
Rhys angled his head, silky dark hair sliding over his brow.
You get used to it. The sense that you're crossing a boundary, that you're violating them. For what it's worth, I didn't particularly...